This is the Vermilion Lake Boys Fort Oral History Project. It's Tuesday, November 19th, 1996. The subject today is the Lake Vermilion Indian School. I'm Marvin Lampa. With me is Mrs. Marge Konu of 4505 Halt Road, Aurora, Minnesota. Mrs. Konu is a member of the Bruno family of Tower. Her grandparents lived on a homestead that bordered the Vermilion Lake Indian Reservation until 1923. Mrs. Konu's grandparents and her step-grandfather, George Hunter, all worked at the Vermilion Lake Boarding School. Okay, I guess we're in good shape here. Before you start, why don't you just say something about yourself and growing up? You grew up in Tower, did you?
Yeah, I was born in Tower in 1924 in August. The eighth child, born on the eighth day of the eighth month.
Is that right?
I always told my mother I was the jinx. There were 10 of us in the family, and I lived next door to my grandmother. My dad's mother lived next door to us.
Okay, but your grandparents lived in town then?
No, well, not till after my grandfather died.
Okay.
They lived out on a farm. I think they had a homestead, 160 acres, right next to the Indian Reservation, on Everett Bay.
On Everett Bay?
Yeah.
That would be on the other side of the bay then?
I don't know which side. I was never out there.
Oh, you never were there?
No. My grandfather died the year before I was born. He died in October of 23. And then my grandma portioned the farm out to her three sons, and what was left she sold. And I understand there's a golf course or something out there now.
Oh, is that right? I wouldn't know it.
And my grandmother moved into town then, and with the money she got for the farm, she had a small house built next door to us. And that's where I remember her from. Sorry to say, I never knew my grandfather when he died before I was born. But I heard a lot of stories and saw a lot of pictures of him, you know. And the two of them, when they had the Indian school over on what we called the Sucker Point Reservation. I don't know what they call it now. Vermilion Reservation,
yeah,
or something,
Vermilion,
I guess.
Indian Reservation.
But this is what we always called it because it was on Sucker Point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Indian school that was over there, from what my grandmother told me, there was a dormitory for the girls and a dormitory for the boys. And she was the house mother for the girls, and my grandfather was house father for the boys. My mother's father, or stepfather, was the steam engineer. This was George Hunter. My dad's parents were named Lorenzo and Charlotte Lottie. Well, they called her Lottie. Bruno.
Okay, just a minute. Bruno, were they immigrants, the people? Or
no, they were born in this country.
They were born in where?
Yeah, they were born in Wisconsin.
They're Wisconsin people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And my grandfather was in logging down there, and then he came up to Minnesota and was, and they, when they, for quite a while, they worked in lumber camps, and my grandmother was a cook, and I don't know what my grandpa did in a lumber camp. I suppose cut wood like the rest of them. But my grandma cooked in lumber camps because she always would tell me how the things she made and how many pies she made. She said if she could see all the pies she made on flat cars piled up about 10 feet high in layers, it would take an awful long train. But she made the best apple pie in the world.
Okay, before we go, now their parents, where did they come from?
They came from My grandpa Bruno's parents came from France.
Well, that's right. Bruno then is French.
It's French. Brunneau.
Yeah? Okay.
At the time when my grandma lived next to us, she spelled her last name Bruno because my grandpa was a twin, an identical twin. And his male and everything was getting mixed up between him and his brother because his brother was up here too. Now, where he lived, I don't know. But they were the Alonzo and Lorenzo Bruno, and they were such identical twins. My grandma had a picture of them. an oval picture, just a bust picture of them, and they had dark suits and bow ties on, spotted bow ties. She had to count the dots on the ties in order to know which one was her husband. They were that identical. And they were good dancers. They used to do clog dancing down in, when they were young, you know, down in Wisconsin.
What part of Wisconsin do you know?
I think around Green Bay, Kewaunee, in that area.
Yeah. Were they ever associated with the fur trade or anything like that, fur trade?
That I know of. Now, he might have had, when his parents came here, I should have brought my genealogy along. They came to Nova Scotia and then to Vermont.
Okay, that's lumber.
And my mother tried tracing the family. And the twin brother, she was in Tower at one time, around there. And another one they called Uncle Daddy. I think that was Benjamin. They came to Minnesota. They came to Wisconsin and then Minnesota. But I think my grandpa was born in Wisconsin. Some of the kids were, they had a big family. Some of them were born in Vermont. But some of them went up into Canada. And my mother tried tracing them for years. She wrote to every place she could think of. She never could find them all. Mm-hmm. But they were a big family. There was there 12, 13 kids.
And their name is?
Was Bruno.
Bruno.
B-R-U-N-E-A-U.
Okay.
That's the true spelling of it.
And your grandmother's?
My grandmother's name was Charlotte Pfeiffer Delaney.
Delaney.
Bruno. Okay. Yeah. She was, her parents, her dad was Scotch and Irish, and her mother was German and English.
Of course, what made them come up to Lake Vermilion and the Tower?
I think the logging. They got into that, and then that kind of brought them up here because there was so much of that going on up there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the Tower lumber industry.
Yeah, and I suppose that was the trade they knew, so that's they followed it. You know, and I'm not sure what year they came. I would have to go back and look in the genealogy if it's there even. But there I would have all the dates of their birth and where they were, you know, all about them. My mother kept genealogy, and I have her records. And it's been very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Because I've traced my grandfather's... I found I had a second cousin in Hartford, Connecticut that I never knew of through a letter that her father had written to Judd, my brother Judd, my brother George, in 55, and he was 90 years old at that time.
I'll be darned.
No, he'd be about 90 now, but he's dead now. But anyway, I got the letter from Velma, from my sister-in-law, after George died, and she found these letters, and she asked if I wanted to keep them, you know, because they had information about the family, and so I was going to write out there and find out what I could about it. And then I thought, don't be a dummy, get on the telephone. So I called Orleans, Vermont, information. And I asked the operator, are there any Brunos listed? Because they had a lumber company out there.
Is that right?
Yeah, that George Albert Bruno, or Albert George Bruno, had him and I don't know, relatives or something. They had a lumber company, the Bruno Lumber Company in Orleans, Vermont. And the operator told me there was just one listed in Orleans, but there was several in the little towns around it. Well, I said, could I have the telephone number of the... There was a daughter-in-law to this, Albert George. The heck was her name now? Yvonne Bruno. She had been married to his son, and they had divorced about 20 years ago. The son was up in Maine, and she told me the town. I think I wrote it down. So I talked to her, and she told me that the daughter, her sister-in-law, lived in, I think it's Hartford, Connecticut. She told me her name, her address, her telephone number, the whole bit. And so I was going to write to her, and then I thought, yeah, dummy, what's the telephone for? So I called the lady. And at first, I didn't get a hold of her, but I called after five then, And I don't know, she'd been gone someplace and or working or something. And I talked to her. And when I got her on the phone, I didn't know what to say at first. I said, you know, I think you're related to me. That sounded dumb.
No, it's but, about what you do.
Her name is Irene Latoya, Bruno Latoya, and that was her father who wrote the letter. And so she asked if I would make a copy of it and send to her, and I did. And then I wrote down all the members in her father's family. And her grandfather and my grandfather were brothers.
Oh.
So we're second cousins.
So you found all that.
Yeah.
Now tell me a little bit about, was it Lorenzo, your grandfather?
Yeah.
And he, was he first in the kind of in the lumber business? And then they,
well,
the farm,
family,
did they?
The family afterward, I think he was born in Wisconsin. Some of these kids were born in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The folks moved there, I think. And but some of them got left out, you know. Some of the brothers got left out there. But his father moved to Wisconsin, and that's where he was born.
Okay. Then he came to Minnesota.
They came to Minnesota.
About when, do you have any?
I'm not sure.
They went to
Let's
Lake Vermilion.
My dad was born, and my dad was the oldest kid, and he was born in 1888. And he was born in Wisconsin yet, so it was after that that they
so
came.
So it would be like the 1890s? Would it be that? Or
probably,
1900,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, somewhere in there, yeah.
And did he work with the tower sawmill thing? Or?
Yes, he was a saw filer in the tower sawmill.
Ah,
okay, I have it in here. He filed the big band saw and the circle saw. And my dad worked there in the sawmill. When he was 14 years old, he went to work in the sawmill.
Okay, your dad's name was?
Rossman.
Rossman.
Just like my brother's. Only
okay.
His middle name was Alonzo.
I see.
Rossman Alonzo.
Rossman
Bud's
Alonzo.
Is Rossman John.
And your mother's name?
My mother's name was Louise Frances Otten.
Okay.
And her, she was born in Wisconsin in...
This is your mother, or is this your grandmother now?
My mother.
Your mother.
My mother,
yeah.
Her parents split up when she was, about 6 months old. Her father was a drunk. He wasn't providing for them, and her parents were German, and they came and got her and the baby, and they just took her home with them. And she lived with them, and when... at one time, my grandfather wanted to take them back, but the grandparents wouldn't let her go. And they came up here when my mother was 2 years old. Her aunt came down there to have a child, her third child, and she died in childbirth, so did the baby. And so her husband came down from Tower. That was George Hunter.
Okay.
And
George Hunter was your step-grandfather.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He came down to Milwaukee to, you know, to take care of everything, and he had two little girls, and he didn't know how to take care of them. And so he asked my mother's mother, my grandma, if she would come and housekeep for him and bring her little girl, and he would provide for all of them.
Lovely.
So yeah. They came here, and... I don't know where exactly he worked. He was a boilermaker, a steam engineer, and he ran that by the museum train they had that steam thing. He ran that for the city,
mm-hmm.
and for when they'd have fires and that. And they lived up above the old city hall, the old fire station, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
I noticed neither one was involved in the mines.
No. No.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
Most people, boy, if you go back, it's them. My grandfather came and worked in that mine. Yeah.
Well, my dad's father might have worked in the mine if he'd lived longer.
Oh.
But see, he died in 23 already.
Oh, yeah, but there was big jobs in the mine even before.
Yeah.
But now, tell me about them and the school, what they did.
I'm not really sure all they did, but just that my grandparents were the house mother and house father. And I take it that the children lived right there at the school, at least during the week.
Mm-hmm. Where'd they come from? Were they just local?
The kids? Yeah. Yeah, they were from the reservation.
All from the Sucker Point?
Yeah.
Were there any others from anywhere?
I don't know. There might have been some from Annette Lake. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned it boarding. Were they boarding?
Well, they had dormitories for them, so they certainly must have slept there and stayed right there.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And I don't know when this was all disbanded. I do know that when they quit, they tore the things down. They tore everything down. And at my home, we had some hardwood flooring in our home that my dad built on an addition. Too many kids coming. That hardwood flooring came out of the Indian school. And we had the old iron beds, mattresses, and wool, heavy wool blankets, those scratchy old things. My dad bought them from there. I still have one.
This is from the dormitory.
The dormitories, yeah.
This is after they all called.
They had beds that, just iron bed ends, you know, with the like spokes. And
so you slept in them?
Yep, I've still got one.
Is that right?
I've still got one of those beds. My two boys slept in them when they were little. Oh, I had two beds.
That's a valuable item now. I mean, it's got some historical value.
Yeah. I should donate the darn thing. Yeah. I don't know what to do with it. I don't need it anymore.
Well, there might be a place that you might want to do that with, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, but anyway, my grandparents were very good friends with the Indians. They called my grandfather Nabuksik.
Which means
log, some kind of log.
And he was, for his lumbering?
Yeah, see, he worked in the mill that time. And they called his kids Nabuksikums.
Which were?
Chip off the old log. My sister told me that much. I didn't know how to spell that, but I tried it.
How does it sound? How does it spell?
Where did I put it?
Nabaksik.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And but I remember my grandma telling about that the Indians always called Grandpa Nabuksik, and they
knew. You say they were good friends. Like how? What do you mean?
Well, they visited back and forth. Right. The Indians came with... See, they were allowed to hunt and fish on the reservation all they wanted all year long. There was no restrictions on them.
The Indians could.
Yeah, yeah, on the reservation. And so they always had meat and fish, and they needed other staples, so they would trade with my grandparents.
Oh, they kind of ran a little trading.
Yeah, and my grandparents always had a huge garden with everything they could raise. In the soil area, you know, used to be so darn rich that they could raise anything. And they would trade stuff, you know, with the Indians. And some of the staples and stuff even, you know, that they had, they'd trade then. And they visited back and forth. They were good friends. What else did I hear? The only way that you could get into the farm over there was by the lake, Pike Bay and Everett Bay, or else there was no road right into there. You had to drive across a big field into the farm.
Into the farm.
Now, whether there was a good road into the Indian reservation or not, I don't know, because it seemed to me they always came across Pike Bay and landed at Hooter Point when they were going to come to Tower and walked into town. Mm-hmm. And they had birch bark canoes at first and everything, and they would come over and they would come to Doc Lackey's store.
Doc Lackey?
Doc Lackey. It's,
okay.
I got it in here.
What kind of a store?
It was, he had a little bit of everything. An old country store. It used to be, you know where Pilo's Garage was?
Yeah.
It was right. There was an empty lot and then there was Doc Lackey's
right
store.
Okay, right at the west end of town there.
Yep. Yeah. And Doc Lackey traded very much with the Indians. They would come and sit in that vacant lot, you know, when while they were in town, they'd buy stuff from him and then go sit there. And because I saw them there many, many, many times when I was a kid. And then when they had powwows, like on 4th of July and that, across the street from Doc Lackey's store were a couple of empty lots. And that's where they would powwow. That's where they would hold their powwow, right on Main Street.
And this would occur when?
On 4th of July, usually, or if there was some other, usually it was just 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And later on, they powwowed over in the football field by
football
the school.
Field. Was that when there was a main celebration or just 4th of July?
Well, usually 4th of July was about the only time they powwowed in town for people.
You know, remember that?
Yes, I have pictures.
Is that right?
I have pictures of more than one powwow.
Oh.
I couldn't find them right. I brought them with me, but I'm going to look them up.
Yeah, if you, you should, really.
I got to find all my photo albums. I only got 6 dozen of them, you know. I remember Chief John Goodday and his wife. He was chief, many, many years. He finally went blind. And the last years that he came to the powwows, his wife led him. In fact, around her waist, she wore a belt made out of strands of yarn, about 2 inches in diameter. Every color of the rainbow. And it was real long, so she tied it in a knot in front, and he would take one end of that. She had long streamer on. He would hold that, and she would lead him that way. And he went with a cane, but he was blind. But he attended every powwow. Absolutely.
You don't know how old his age.
I really don't know, but I wonder if the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Duluth wouldn't have record. Or another one that would have record. Have you checked with Phyllis Burgess at the Tower News?
No, I haven't.
Try it.
She might have.
She might have. They must have record of their papers from way, way back. And there would be his death notice in there and how old he was and everything. Mm-hmm. But he was an old, old man, I know that. But he would still get out there and he was blind.
And he was blind.
But he still would dance a little bit. When the drum beat, he got up and danced a little bit. At one time, I remember him in full headdress. He didn't have the buckskin outfit, but he was in full headdress and with the breech clout little apron type thing in front, mm-hmm. all beaded, all solid beading. And then one of the cowboys, I don't remember his first name, but he danced every year. I've got good pictures of him. He had a headband, and on that was long black hair. I think it was horse's tail, made out of horse's tail. It was way long, came way down over his shoulders and down his back. And he had the vest, the beaded vest, and the breech clout, front and back, and bunches of bells around his ankles and his knees, below his knees and on his wrists, and he carried this big raven's wing, and just a big black wing from a raven, you know. And then Old Man Curry used to dance, and he had
Curry.
I don't remember his first name. I knew his son Archie.
Okay, was he from on the reservation?
Yeah, these were all from the reservation.
Archie.
Over there. Yeah, he was. They were all from the reservation.
Curry.
Yeah.
You know how that's spelled?
C-U-R-R-Y.
Okay, Curry. Okay.
Yeah. And Mr. Curry always danced. He had a black hat. He always danced with that black hat on. But he had the vest, the beaded vest, and the breech clout, and the bells, you know. And he always had that. He had a big, I don't know, I thought it was bigger than a raven's wing, but I've never been that close to a raven, but it was, I would say, that long. I'd say 18 inches, 20 inches long.
Okay, this is Curry or Cowboy now?
They each had one of these.
They each had one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mr. Curry was a real little short guy. He wasn't, I don't think he was any taller than I am, if that tall. And they really, they always, those two were at every powwow. And then the Indian women that danced had dresses that were decorated with little rolled pieces of metal, like a tube, little tubing, and it was all fringed, like a fringe all around, on the bottom, on their sleeves, on the yoke of the dress and all that. And when they danced, these things would jingle. They even had a couple of little girls that they had dressed up like that. And there was one little boy that was always out there trying to dance, and he was so cute. They had a little breech clout on him, I think, a beaded one, and he had bells on his ankles, you know, sleigh bells type thing, and he would get out there and dance up a storm. Mm-hmm. I might have a picture of him, too.
About what years were these taking place, you're remembering now?
Let's see, I graduated in 42, and this was, before that and after that, during those years.
40s.
30s and 40s, and even into the 50s, mm-hmm. because we'd go home for on 4th of July for the powwow, even after I was married.
In your time, then lots of the kids, or some at least from the reservation, were in school in Tower then?
No.
Where did they go to school?
I don't know. Then later on, after I was out of school, I don't think there was any Indian kids in school when I was going to school. But I think it was shortly thereafter that some of them started coming. And I don't know did they take them to Net Lake or Virginia or where they took them.
Hmm.
Or to some, maybe they had a school over there even that they taught them during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was over to the Indian reservation once. My younger sister was enamored of one of the boys, Joe Columbus.
Okay.
And those boys, him and two, three other boys used to come over from across to the canoe and come to town and be there for the evening, you know, and they'd meet. But he was a good-looking guy. Oh, he was good-looking and clean. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was nice and clean. The other ones with him didn't look too great, but one of them is still living, Bill Lightfeather. Okay. I've seen his name in the paper, and I knew him. And I think Marvin Knott was one of the Knott. Yeah,
I knew Marvin.
Yeah. Did Marvin die?
Yes, he died.
I thought he did this past year, right?
In fact, we had done a preliminary interview with him, and then he died, yeah.
Oh.
He knew a lot of old stories and things.
I imagine, yeah.
Real interested in, yeah.
And there was one other boy that came with it, but I can't remember his name. But anyway, Joe Columbus later on married, an Indian girl, and they had three children, and he got killed on the highway going to Ely.
Oh.
They were coming back toward Tower, I guess, and they had car trouble, and he was out trying to see what was wrong, and a car hit him and killed him. He was just young. He was early 30s.
I'd kind of like to get back to the school again, because anything we can learn about that. And when your grandfather, can you tell me about his job and your grandmother's job in the school?
Well, they saw to it that, that the children did what they were supposed to do and attended their classes, I suppose. And then in the dormitories, they had beds for them, you know, and I suppose they had to see that they were all in bed at night and make them be quiet, I suppose, and things like that, and check on them. Or if the kids, I imagine if they got sick or anything, they would have to take care of them. Or if they needed a doctor, call a doctor or something, or call the medicine man, whoever they mm-hmm. called. But
who hired them?
That I don't know.
Would that be the federal government? Was part of the Tower School District?
That I don't know either. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever said anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether the Tower News would have anything on that, or that Bureau of Indian Affairs in Duluth.
Well, I'm sure
they would have record.
Can find that out.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in you.
And I don't know even how many years that was over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was way before I was born, even.
Oh, yeah. You see, you had mentioned that your grandfather was good friends with the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
He ran a trading post. Were there any other kinds of...
Well, he didn't really run a trading post,
well,
but he
traded
with
them,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much more I can tell you. I've tried to remember more things, and that's why I conferred with my sister, because mm-hmm. I thought she'd remember. She said she has a picture of my grandparents' home, their house.
Oh.
And in front of it are sitting my grandmother and grandfather and a cousin that they raised. They mm-hmm. they raised their second son's daughter,
mm-hmm.
and she lived with them.
And they lived pretty much off the farm.
Yeah.
They have cows and cattle.
They had a horse, I know, and they must have had a cow or something, mm-hmm. because at that time too, Grandpa was probably working at the sawmill.
Oh yeah, so he made. Did he have two jobs, kind of then?
Well, I don't know. I think that was maybe after the Indian school disbanded, that he went there full time then as a saw filer. I imagine that, I don't know if he was still working there before he died or what. Nobody said too much about him just before he died. In fact, I don't even know what he died from.
Hmm. Did they move to Tower then?
Yeah, after he died, my grandmother moved to Tower. She sold the farm.
That would be 1923, did you say? I think.
Yeah, he died in October 1923.
So she would have moved then that year.
She probably moved that year or the following year.
What happened to the property then?
She sold it.
She sold it.
She gave each of her sons 40 acres, and the rest of it she sold.
Well, how many acres they have?
I imagine they had 160. Usually a homestead was 160 acres.
Oh, yeah.
At least that much they had. And my dad sold his 40, and my Uncle Donnie sold his 40. My Uncle Lyle sold his. My dad and my Uncle Lyle sold their 40s. My Uncle Donnie kept his 40, and that went to his daughter when he died. He lived in Duluth then, and his daughter got that when he died. And this was the girl that my grandparents raised. Because my grandma broke up their marriage, let's put it that way. And my grandmother was kind of a nasty lady at times. She broke up two of her son's marriages.
And why was that?
Well, she had picked out the wives for them. They didn't marry them wives.
That was kind of the old tradition, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. So?
The drums and drumming.
Let's see where it goes. I was always fascinated by the drummers because I played bass drum in the band when I was in school. And their drum always fascinated me, and I wanted to get close to it and really look at it close, and I'd get as close as I dared, but the men were all around the drum, see, hit it, you know, pounding, and you couldn't get real close, and I don't think they liked it if the white man got a little too close to him anyway. But it always fascinated me, the chant that they would do, you know. They chanted different. If you listened close, the chants were different. They weren't all alike. They meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, really fascinated me. And boy, they would really pound that drum. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't know how that drum took it. And they had a long stick. I would say about 3/4 of an inch in diameter, maybe. And then at the end it was padded with, I suppose at one time, a buckskin tied on there, you know. But not very thick either, but boy, would they pound that. But they pounded so that they wouldn't break the drum, of course, but flat, kind of, not poking at it or nothing. But
what did you find out about anything else about the drums? Or? You said you were fascinated. You always wanted to find out something.
Yeah, well, I noticed when they brought it there that they had it wrapped in buckskin.
Oh.
A big, you know, thing of buckskin. And they took very, very good care of it. Now, how they cared for it when they weren't using it, but they must have had to store it in a place that wasn't too dry or too humid, because it would have ruined the hide on there. Because that hide would have to be a certain tightness to give them the sound they wanted.
And it had quite a sound then.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. You could hear that beating. Gee, we lived on the south edge of town. I think you could hear that from the football field when those guys were pounding.
Is that right?
Man, it was really something to watch. They had what they called a squaw dance, and only the women danced that one. And even these couple of little girls that they had decked out in their fancy clothes, you know, even they would get out there and dance with in the squaw.
How would
dance.
You did they announce the dance?
No, well, in later years they did a little bit, but they didn't have any microphone or anything. Mm-hmm. It was hard to hear them, but my dad and mother and my grandma knew that, you know, that what the dance, some of the dances were.
They knew.
Yeah, and I think my grandma was the one that told me that they call that the squaw dance.
Okay.
But only the women danced, and they got in a circle, facing the center of the circle, and they just like this. And they went around in a circle.
Oh.
That's the way the women danced.
Mentioned these all had a purpose and a meaning to it.
Yeah, their dances had a meaning, yeah. They danced for, well, they danced for war too, but they danced for, they had many gods, mm-hmm. you know, and they danced like a harvest one, and I suppose for spring and winter, and the whole works, you know, anything that came up, they had a dance for it.
Mm-hmm.
That was their way of, would you say, praying, really,
mm-hmm.
To honor their gods,
mm-hmm.
and to appease them, you know. and offer them. Of course, they always had the pipe ceremony too. I forgot to put that in here. They would smoke the Chief Goodday would sometimes smoke that peace pipe. He would have that lit, and they would pass it back and forth to the ones that sat on each side of him there. And
what happened after Chief Goodday was gone then?
John Sabadis took over as Chief.
Sabadis. Can you tell me something about him?
I didn't know too much about him. I remember him. He was a big, tall fellow. Nice-looking man. A good stature. He must have been 6 feet tall. Whereas Chief Goodday was, I would say, about 5'8", 5'9". He wasn't that tall, but John Sabadis was a tall man for an Indian.
Did you ever hear anything about a chief wake him up? Any stories about a wake him up?
That might have been before John Goodday.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah,
I think so.
You don't remember any stories about?
No,
that,
no, I don't really.
Okay.
I know Wake Him Up Bay was named after him.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. This remember anything? But Sabadis.
Sabadis. I've got it spelled here. S-A-B-A. I think it's S-A-B-A-D-H-I-S.
Sabadis.
Oh, yeah. When they wrote things, they wrote in short. Now, that was probably S-A-B-A-D-H-I-S.
Okay, three, with a hyphen.
Three words. Okay, yeah. I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Chief Goodday had a regular Indian name too, mm-hmm. but I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they all had Indian names.
I remember that name, Bob O'Leary. Where's my pen?
O'Leary.
I knew it wasn't an Indian name.
Okay, he was chief after Sabadis.
Yep.
Then?
Yep. I don't know where that O'Leary got in there.
Well, that's a name that's tied in with the people of the lake. I know that.
That's a Irish name.
Yes, it
O'Leary.
Is. Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
How many Indians were there during the time, say, of your grandfather?
Well,
on Lake Vermilion,
there must have been quite a few. A lot of them that I didn't know. You know, mm-hmm. those that I imagine there was a lot of them that never came to the powwows or did any of the dancing. It was usually the cowboys. That one cowboy I know, but he had brothers too that danced at times. When I was a kid, I remember more than one of those cowboys danced.
Mm-hmm. There was a Bob cowboy.
Yeah, but that was a relation. But he was a kid that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was Bob cowboy senior now. His dad, wasn't he Bob too?
Yeah, but Bob senior would be probably
a kid then.
No a more. Kid then, yeah, because I'm 72.
Okay. Well,
No,
Bob Sr. would have been a lot older than you.
Well, he would have been older, I mean, yeah. than me, but not that much.
Not that much, no. There were quite a few cowboys.
Oh, yes, they had a big family.
And they lived on Lake Vermilion?
Yep. And the Chosas did.
And the Chosas did
Big
as well.
Annie Chosa. I forgot to put her in here.
She lived on Lake Vermilion.
Mm-hmm.
Are they related to the people who had the
portage
of Basswood?
She had umpteen kids.
Is that right? How many?
I don't know. I really don't know how many kids she had, but she sure had good-looking kids.
Is that right?
I knew, Vincent Josa. Oh, I almost had a crush on him. Oh, he was a good-looking guy.
Vincent.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting, the name Vincent.
Yeah.
Because I've been told that the Chosas were related to the Roys. Vincent Roy was a trader on Lake Vermilion in real early times.
Well, Annie Chosa might have had a lot of kids by him. Who the heck knows? She didn't have them all by Chosa. We know that. She was Big Annie. She was a great big fat one.
Oh
she was big and fat.
And she lived on Vermilion.
And she was tough. Mm-hmm. Boy, I tell you, she even looked crabby. But I knew Vincent, and I knew... I was at the bus depot one night waiting for my aunt who was coming in on the bus in Tower about 7 o'clock in the evening, and Vincent Chosa was standing off to one side out on the sidewalk, and I wondered why he was there. And then I saw this beautiful girl got off the bus. Holy Christmas, was she pretty. beautiful long black wavy hair and in a beautiful light colored suit with a beautiful blouse and nylons and high heels and everything, makeup up. She didn't have much makeup, but a little bit. And that was his sister.
Oh.
He went over and they hugged each other. And
she was coming from
She was coming from a college, I guess.
Oh, college, yeah.
Gee.
Well, now, they. If how long did that, I mean, how long did they go to school at the lake? I'm still trying to figure out, because some of them went to college, how'd they get, you know, between grade school?
I don't know. That's what I can't figure, where the heck they would have gone to school if they had.
So the school lasted until they were what, about sixth grade or so, would you say?
I don't really know. I have no notion at all of how long that school was there.
But when you were going to school in Tower, there
when
weren't
I was
any?
No, I don't remember any Indian kids going to school.
Do you remember any before your time of having gone?
No.
None. Okay.
I imagine that they had somebody taught them over there.
Mm-hmm.
They must have had some kind of schooling right there on the reservation, probably. Mm-hmm. Like these little country
schools.
Well, the
Indian school.
Yeah.
Now, were the buildings torn? There was quite a large building.
Yeah, they were torn down because, like I say, we got some of the flooring from there.
Can you tell me anything about what the school looked like or the building?
Not really, no. My grandmother never said, and she never had any pictures. Well, those days, you know, people didn't take pictures that much. They couldn't afford a camera in the first place.
Yeah, that's true, too.
But there should be some record of that. In that Indian Bureau.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure we can get some pictures. In fact, I do have some pictures.
I would even love to have a picture of that.
Well, I might be able to show you a picture. And maybe we can get a copy for you.
I'd love to do that. Yeah.
Great.
I'd love to have one. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it relates back to my grandparents.
Yeah.
And I often wondered what kind of a house mother my grandmother was.
You want to go? Your grandmother was house mother.
Yeah, and my grandfather was house father
house
in the boys' dormitory.
And your
my step grandfather was on my mother's side was the steam engineer.
He ran the steam.
He ran the
plant.
Yep.
That thing was run heated by steam. It had electricity. Did it? It must have.
That I don't know whether they heated by coal or wood or what to get up the steam.
How would they get the coal
there? I don't know. Haul it across the... That's why I say I don't know whether there was a road into there or not.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been just, you know, two tracks. Who knows? But I should think there would have been some kind of a access to that, besides the lake. But
how
see,
would they get all the buildings there?
The Indians didn't have any cars or anything,
mm-hmm.
so they had to come across the lake and walk into town.
Mm-hmm. Did they come into town and shop in the...
Yeah. Yeah,
they did in your time.
Yes, they bought from Doc Lackey.
How about before your time?
They probably did then too. Doc Lackey was an old man when I was young,
and he had been
taking care of the Indians for years.
Okay, and he had his store right in Tower.
Yep.
Oh.
And see, that was more the edge of town at mm-hmm. that time, so they would come that far.
Well, did they come up the river there?
They came from Hoodoo Point, and they'd walk over toward the sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
And to the railroad track, and then follow the railroad track up to the edge of town.
Okay, that's...
Because the railroad track went past where the depot is now and went down to the sawmill.
To the sawmill,
yeah. So this is the route we took when we went swimming at Hoodoo Point.
Follow the railroad track.
We followed the railroad track, and then we got down by the sawmill, then we went along the shore, and then there was a little... a bunch of trees and bushes there we had to walk. We had a trail through there. That wasn't very big, about as big around as your house is. And then we'd come out on Hoodoo Point.
Oh, and swimming right out there, sand beach.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
You could walk a long city block out there before you got up water up to your chest.
Wow.
Oh, it was shallow.
That was just across the bay from the reservation now, right?
Just about, yeah, yeah.
That was Echo Point on the other side, was it? No.
Sucker Point.
Sucker Point on the other side.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Indians, where they came across was just over from Hoodoo Point, not where we swam, but where the bay went around, they would land up in there.
Okay.
It was a kind of a jog up in there.
It was a regular landing place for them.
For them, yeah. That's where they always landed.
And were they on the lake a lot, too? Did you see them around in various islands and so on?
Well, I never got up on the lake.
Oh, you never did.
In all my 18 years of living by it, I never got on it, and I always wanted to.
That's unusual, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because and my mother's stepfather also ran a boat on Lake Vermilion.
Okay, that name again?
George Hunter.
George Hunter.
He, where did I have that? Oh, that's in here. My mother put that all in here about her stepfather running the, let's see. Logs were towed with boats from up the lake to the sawmills at Tower. These boats were driven by steam. Some were passenger boats. Captain Cody ran a passenger boat and had his daughter Clara, now Mrs. Joe Paradis of Gein, at the wheel to steer the boat. Mr. Billy Williams, also had a passenger boat. His daughter Libby was the pilot. Mr. William Osterberg purchased the Libby, repainted and called it the Olivia after his daughter Olive, now Mrs. Frank Hoyt. I don't know if you remember her, but she was our neighbor down the alley. Mm-hmm. He also owned the Mary Bell excursion boat, a two-decker. And George Hunter ran the Oddfellow, a passenger boat, which later was used to tow logs on the lake.
I've heard the name before, Oddfellow. I've run into
that. He ran that.
And they pulled logs with that thing.
Yeah, Ogeda, I think it was.
Were there any Indians living in the or working in the sawmill at that time?
That I don't know. I don't know. I imagine they mostly hired white people.
How about the mines?
No, I doubt they worked in the mines either. I don't know whether the Indians got a small stipend from the government at that time or not. If it was, it was maybe once a year or something. Mm-hmm. They got a little bit. Then later, in later years, then they were given like a monthly
annuity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But, and then she's got this Ogeda was owned by the lumber company. A side wheeler was built by a Frenchman, Mr. Fecteau. The boiler of the boat exploded, throwing the engineer out into the lake and burning him very badly, causing his death by drowning. Now gasoline launches, speedboats, and outboard motors run on the lake. $60,000 was used to dredge East Two Rivers to make it possible for larger boats to come up the river. Boathouses were built along the river channel.
Yep,
there's still some of them there. The Hudson Bay Trading Post was situated on the Narrows for the purpose of fur trading. The Indians did quite a business with several of these trading posts situated conveniently nearby.
Oh.
That's about all she's got on the Indians. But she's got on churches and schools and
everything
people and...
it's kind of unusual that they have so little about the Indians.
Yeah, I thought she had more about it.
Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, this was a copy of... She's got some of this in her writing that she added. And I thought in her original copy she had more about it. My sister Betsy has all her notes and clippings and everything. She got these from home.
Mm-hmm.
I think before when my mother was in the rest home, she gave them to her. And she said she's going to look them up, look through them, and see if there's anything in those that she used to derive this history of Tower. And there might be something in there. And she said if there is, she'll send them to me or get her copies made for me.
Mm-hmm. You remember your grandfather, do you? Or was he gone when...
He was gone. He died a year before I was born. My Grandpa Hunter, I remember.
You remember. Did he ever talk about that school?
No, well, I was so little.
They didn't talk.
They moved to Duluth then.
Oh, okay.
When I was little. But I remember, they lived down the alley from us, across the alley, about halfway down. They had a house there where John Arnson lived. Walter Arnson lived.
Okay.
That, it was there. They tore it down, and then he moved that house in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who lives there now. My nephew lives next door to him in Hoyt's house.
Oh.
Daryl Bird.
Some of those houses are pretty old.
Yeah,
been around
Hoyt's house is real old. And Well, some of them have been remodeled and that too, you know. But a friend of mine, she grew up with me, went to school with me. We went riding around in Tower one day, and I said, that's so-and-so's house, and so-and-so lived there, and so-and-so lived. She said, how do you remember them? Well, I said, I remember them. That's all.
Well, most people wouldn't. Some people have that sort of...
She said, I can't remember that. Well, there's nothing in the miscellaneous either. She's even got all the mayors up till 49 or so. And she's got one thing in here about a Whitman who moved to Eveleth and became the banker.
Whitman?
Whitman. George Whitman?
Mm-hmm.
I have his mustache cup.
You have?
This was in Tom Taylor's barbershop.
Okay, you're using a mustache cup. Maybe you want to explain that, what the mustache cup.
Well, each fellow that went to the barbershop had his own cup and brush where when they shaved them, see? And so that's the only one they ever used, and they had their name written on it.
Mm-hmm. And so you've got that.
I have, because my mother got it. Tom Taylor was a black man that lived in Tower.
Mm-hmm.
The only black couple that ever lived there.
Taylor.
That I know. Taylor. Thomas
Taylor.
T-A-Y-L-O-R. Mm-hmm. T-A-Y-L-O-R, yeah. They lived back of us on the very edge of town. There was the only house back there on the south edge of town, right above the railroad track. And he was the town one of the town barbers. He had a little barber shop on where Scala's was there, right across on the same side of the street, just across the side street there. And right in that corner, he had a little barber shop. There was a high bank there, but it built out, you know, and he had steps going up to the back of it. And his wife was, she cleaned the Presbyterian church. They went to the church there. She sang for weddings, funerals. She played the organ, and she sang like an angel. Oh, she could sing. She taught a couple of my older sisters to play chords on the organ. And Tom Taylor himself was very, very talented in music. And he played snare drum in the city band. I have his snare drum, and I have played it when I was, what the heck was I, almost 12 years old. They needed a snare drummer to play in the city band for 4th of July parade, and I was the one, and I got paid $5 for it. But I have his drum, and I don't know what instruments all he played, but he even wrote music, and he wrote a song called Better Than Gold. He had it published. He had it patented and published. Better Than Gold. And I sang it once out at Luskanen.
Well, it's a published song, is it?
It's published, but he never sold any copies or nothing. I don't know how many copies I got. I got a whole bunch of them. My mother had a whole box full of them like this after they died, or after they moved away from there. He went cuckoo, and they took him to Moose Lake, and that's where he
Taylor.
Died.
Taylor.
Yeah. And he was he was on there, he's pictured in the train of the baseball team. They got little oval pictures all around like this in a collage, and he's pictured in there. He was one of their star players. He was real good. These people they came from Haiti or someplace like that. They weren't all black, they were part Spanish mixed in there, something.
How come they came to Tower?
That I don't know. I don't know, but they were there. My mother played with their daughters. They had four daughters and a son. Their four daughters are buried in the Tower Cemetery.
Oh, okay.
And my mother always took care of their grave, you know, afterward and that. But the son went to Youngstown, Ohio, and he worked as a porter on a train or something, I guess, for years. And then he took his mother after his father went goofy. He took the mother and kept her there, and I think she died there in later years. But my mother corresponded with her and then with the son and his wife for many years. I don't think any of them are living anymore. Mm-hmm. But my mother was a great letter writer.
This is interesting.
But There's a saying that when one black couple moves into a town, they won't let any other blacks come in.
Hmm. Was that said around Tower?
No, this was from... I remember people saying this when I was growing up. Uh-huh. You know, you hear things and you think of them later. There was a black couple in Virginia. I remember seeing her on a street corner, dressed fit to kill. A beautiful suit, high heels, nylons, a hat, and fur piece. Fur scarf, you know. Standing on the street corner of Virginia, and I thought, where did she come from? I didn't even know that a black person lived in Virginia. But this black couple lived there. I remember seeing the man once only, but I saw the lady several times. And then when all these blacks have come in now, then I've thought of this many times, that they always said if a black couple moved into a small town like that, they wouldn't let anybody else, they wouldn't let any more blacks come in. Now there's lots of them in Virginia.
I'm wondering, this has made me think, I'm wondering about what was the attitude of the people in Tower toward the Indians? Was there just no relationship? Sounds from you like there was a lot.
There was,
grandparents.
Yeah, with my grandparents. But most of the people thought they were no goods, you know. And the Indians were always put down. That was one thing that made me very angry. I didn't think that was right. People made fun of them, mm-hmm. you know. And the way they dressed, well, they couldn't help how they dressed. Mm-hmm. They were so darn poor, mm-hmm. and wearing hand-me-downs and clothes people gave them and things like that. I don't think they had a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I know Doc Lackey used to sell them, this isn't a lie, this is the truth, lemon extract.
Lemon extract.
By the case. They used to drink it, get drunk on it.
Oh.
And also canned heat.
No.
They'd buy that, open the can, pour it through a loaf of bread, you know, one end to the other, get the alcohol out of it and drink it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, did he have a large store, this land?
It was good size.
And, of course, there was everybody traded there, bought things there. Not
anybody could, yeah, because I bought candy there lots of times. He had a candy counter right inside the door. You know, I couldn't resist that, because when I was a kid, I peddled milk for an old Slovenian lady in Tower, Mrs. Jackshaw, and my route, I had three places only, but I had to go down Main Street. I went to the Old City Hotel, and then I'd cut across over to Doc Lackey's store and go up the street, side street to Gerald Peterson's home. You know Gerald?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And to Marsh Nelson's home.
Oh, yeah, I know Marsh too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Played ball with them, both of them.
I've known Marsh since he was that big.
Yep. He used to be our manager of our team.
I tease the heck out of him every time I see him. He's a good kid.
Yeah.
But anyway, if I had any money to spend, you know, I had to stop in Doc Lackey's store and spend it.
So it was a pretty
popular place. If I had a penny or a nickel, you know, I had to get in there and... I was kind of a little bit afraid of him, and I used to at one time peddle milk to his house also.
Afraid of him?
He was a real fat guy. He had no hair. I mean, no hair. I don't know. Even on his head, he was completely bald.
Hmm.
No fringe. And I don't think he even had eyelashes or eyebrows.
Hmm.
And he was real fat and, you know, I don't know. He was kind of an odd guy.
He scared you, though.
Yeah, in a way, he did.
Was it just looks or the way he treated you? Or?
Well, just the looks, I guess. You know how kids are.
Yeah, I know kids.
And he didn't have a lot of patience with little kids with a penny to spend. Well, it took him 10 minutes to pick something.
which happened, I'm sure.
I think he used to buy furs from the Indians too, and stuff like that.
Did the Indians bring in furs to?
I think they did.
Where did they do their trapping? I wonder.
On the reservation, I suppose.
Well, it's a pretty small reservation.
Nobody lived over there at that time. There wasn't that many people living there. I think they had the right to trap wherever they wanted, almost. No, a white man never trapped that much.
Of course, that whole north side of Vermilion was pretty wild anyway. Trout Lake.
So I imagine any place up in there, you know, they could trap in that. But they brought all these to Doc Lackey because he made an effort to buy from them, you know, and that stuff. I think he bought beaded things too, moccasins and stuff that he sold in his store.
To who?
To white people, you know, souvenir stuff.
Where a lot of tourists would buy them.
Yeah, yeah. And but I don't remember the Indians going to the other stores, because there was Herman Olson's store where my father worked. Mm-hmm. But I think they came there at some time or other, because they knew that he was Lorenzo Bruno's son. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, if they wanted something, they would go to somebody they knew.
Oh, their name was pretty well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The name was well known to them, and they felt they could trust him, I guess.
I'm kind of interested in your grandfather. Anything else you can tell me about him and your grandmother? We know they came from Wisconsin.
Well, my grandmother, the years I remember her living next door, I think I put that in here too, that she, the year she died and everything, she lived there till 1946, and then the last couple months or so of her life, she went to live with her, this daughter that they had, it wasn't her daughter, they raised this girl. It wasn't, she said it was her daughter, and it was not. My Aunt Winifred was not, never adopted or anything. People didn't adopt kids in those days. They took them and raised them. But my grandma always said she had her, and she didn't. Mm-hmm. There were several stories about that. She had gone to Wisconsin, and she was gone for about 6 months. When she came back, she had my Aunt Winifred, little baby. Mm-hmm. Some said that she talked to this Polish family into letting her take their littlest one, because they had so many kids. And another one said that her sister had a baby out of wedlock, and she took the baby. But I would say my Aunt Winifred was from a family that